Thank you for taking the time this morning to tune in to our presentation about the ISO's 2022 long-term transmission plan. So there's a few housekeeping details before we kick things off. So I just want to let everyone know that this meeting is being recorded, and in accordance with our stakeholder framework, we will post it on our website within 24 hours, the recording. In terms of how to ask questions, there'll be different pauses throughout the session this morning. And we'd ask that you raise your hand, your virtual hand in the Teams chat, and we will then see your hand raised and we'll unmute you. You'll have a prompt on your end to unmute yourself. You can then ask your question and then we'll remute you. So pretty straightforward there. And then finally, at the end of the session this morning, there'll be four quick questions, just a poll for our own kind of metrics, you know, whether you found value, etc. So with that in mind, I will pass it over to Dennis, who can take the reins from here.
Thanks, Ryan. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us here this morning on our long-term plan and sharing the results of that. For those of you who don't know who I am, I'm Dennis Frelick. I'm going to start with introducing those that are going to be presenting here from the ISO, the team that's engaged today. Before I do that, I'm not sure if those joining have heard that I am moved out of my VP of grid reliability role, transitioning to retirement. And so I just wanted to inform you all of some of the changes that have occurred at the ISO as a result. First, we have split the role that I was leading at the ISO in grid reliability into two teams, one being a planning-focused team and one being an operations-focused team. Marie-France Samaroden has been promoted to the VP of Grid Reliability Operations and will be leading that part of our organization. And I just want to introduce Rob Davidson, who's here today. He has been promoted to our VP of Grid Reliability and Planning and holds accountability for all the planning elements in our grid reliability organization now, and that includes the long-term plan. So welcome, Rob, to your new role and these go-forward accountabilities.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Dennis. Appreciate it. I know probably many of you, I looked through the attendees list, I probably know many of you through my work in the connection side. That's where I previously came from. So anyways, really looking forward to working with everyone in my new capacity. So welcome, everyone.
Thanks, Rob. I'd like to introduce the rest of the team that's here from a presentation and Q&A perspective. First, Ada Raymond. You probably all know Ada. He's our Director of Grid Planning and Operations Engineering. Peter Long, he's our Manager of System Planning. And Dan Weeb, who's our Lead Engineer of System Planning. Those three individuals, particularly Peter and Dan, have been leading the team that did all the work on this long-term plan for 2022. And so if you have any questions, they will definitely be able to answer the majority of them. Obviously, we'll be going through the agenda here that you see in front of you. Please feel free to ask any questions as they come up. We'll stop at every section of the presentation to seek any questions from you. And obviously, at the end of the session, we'll do Q&A to answer any remaining questions. I wanted to emphasize a few key highlights here in the long-term plan for 2022. First and foremost, understand this work has been integrated quite closely to our 2021 long-term outlook work that our team has put together. So those are the various scenarios that were in our long-term outlook. We have very much used a risk-based approach here, and Dan and Peter will describe that as we go through the results, essentially focusing on as many scenarios and future developments that we can to identify what is possibly needed in the future as we look out 5, 10, 15 years here in Alberta based on those long-term outlook scenarios. On top of that, you will see that we continue to focus on optimizing the existing transmission system before we make a decision to move forward with the need for any new infrastructure, as well as the timing of construction for any new infrastructure. And so I want to emphasize in this long-term plan, we have identified potential projects, projects that may be needed in the future, depending on which scenario paths unfold, as well as how quickly those future scenario paths seem to unfold. And so timing and scenarios are important in determining which actual projects we will move forward with from a need perspective. And obviously, as an ISO, we don't centrally plan supply here in Alberta. And so we are looking at potential projects based on our market structure and the economics of generation coming into our market here in Alberta. Overall, you'll see, as compared to the last LTO, we have deferred about $1 billion of transmission projects by several years based on our risk analysis and congestion assessment analysis and optimization of the network. And we'll continue to see if there's opportunities to defer infrastructure going forward. If all of the projects that we have potentially identified here in this long-term plan actually get built, we're looking at a potential cost of $1 to $2 a month for the average residential customer here in the province, just to give you an idea of the range of cost impact that potentially could unfold. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dan, and Dan will walk you through more details of our long-term plan and answer questions as things unfold. So feel free to ask questions. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Dennis. I'd like to begin with a quick review of the transmission planning process. The 2022 LTP was developed using a risk-based approach. What that means is that for selected major projects, we estimated the probability that the system would be adequate with and without the project using hourly simulations. Furthermore, when we used traditional deterministic planning studies, we used study conditions that were informed by statistical analysis. Finally, we considered a range of scenarios and focused our attention on projects that were robustly useful, considering a reasonable range of variation in key variables. The LTP aims to optimize use of the existing system before calling for new transmission build. We identified several potential means to optimize the system. We explored generation shedding or runback schemes for anticipated generators to mitigate the effects of contingencies and defer the need for redundant transmission. We considered options for network reconfiguration, such as opening transmission lines at times. For selected use cases, we considered how power flow control devices could be used to increase utilization of existing assets. And finally, we aim to make maximum use of existing equipment by implementing low-cost rating increases whenever possible. Planned transmission developments are linked with key drivers that influence need timing. For example, the Seto and Chapel Rock projects are primarily needed to facilitate the interconnection of new generator projects. When investigating the need for these projects, we estimated the amount of nameplate capacity the system could accommodate before relevant transmission constraints would manifest. This approach allows us to quickly estimate changes to system project need dates when market participant plans change. The ISO has a 2-year integrated planning and forecasting cycle. Periodic revision of the LTO is necessary to ensure the forecast reflects the most up-to-date information about the local and world economy, government policy, and the specific plans of Alberta market participants. The LTO has several scenarios, including a baseline that's developed first. Other scenarios typically explore variation in economic growth, diversification or consolidation, and government policy. The LTP is revised once LTO data becomes available. Study cases and production cost models are developed using the baseline scenario, and needs for reliability upgrades are identified. Transmission plans are reviewed and potentially revised based on the needs that are observed. The plans are verified and stress tested using the baseline and other scenarios. Costs are estimated as part of the planning process, and they help inform our choices when different alternatives are available. The LTP is reviewed and approved by the ISO Board of Directors, then filed with the AUC. The cycle restarts soon after the LTP is filed. The LTP is one part of the ISO's role in developing transmission projects. The needs for many transmission projects are discovered when the ISO performs system studies in support of the LTP. Other needs emerge as customer projects advance through the connection process. Projects may be needed to enable generation development and serve load growth while ensuring the electric system continues to meet reliability requirements. When the ISO becomes aware of the potential need for a project, a detailed system study is performed for that project. We document the system performance deficiencies that are anticipated to occur in the future and any changes to load or generation on which they are contingent. We then engage in a creative process to develop alternatives and an analytical process to recommend a specific preferred alternative based on technical, environmental, and economic factors. These factors include relative costs, land use impacts, and stakeholder feedback. The results are compiled into a need identification document that's submitted to the Alberta Utilities Commission. The ISO typically studies projects two or more times, once when they're conceived for the purposes of the LTP, and again when a NID is prepared. Many projects in the LTP are at the pre-NID stage. Therefore, the projects that are ultimately constructed might differ from those described in the LTP. Furthermore, the LTP does not include every project the ISO has studied because strong LTO support is typically a prerequisite for inclusion in the LTP. So I'd like to pause here for questions about the planning process.
Thanks, Dan. And we have one question from Santi, so I'm going to unmute. And Santi, you can unmute on your end. What's your question?
Thanks, ASO team. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Just on slide 7, the first bullet there states that the ISO is looking to optimize the grid, looking at potential opportunities to delay large transmission developments, and has a list of things there. I'm sure it's not comprehensive or exhaustive, but one of the things I had a question about was, to what extent, if at all, is the ASO considering options like TMR as part of those opportunities? And if so, where does that kind of fall in the range of options that the ASO considers in terms of priority?
Hi, Santi. Thank you for your question. So TMR is definitely a operational tool that's available to the ISO to mitigate real-time situations where we may run into challenges when we have, for example, multiple contingencies or outages on the system. From a planning perspective, you're correct. The list here is not exhaustive, just some of the examples of optimization approaches that we use. But from a planning purpose, we do not rely on TMR as a planning solution.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Santi.
We have one more question from Bryce Hughes. So, Bryce, I will allow your mic, and you should be able to unmute yourself and ask your question.
Thank you. I was curious. It sounded like the ISO was strongly considering a lot of non-wire solutions in terms of generation runback, and you mentioned opening transmission lines. I was curious, under the transmission regulation, it's very specific that non-wire solutions can be permitted in the case of a specific limited period of time. When the ISO has considered those solutions, has the ISO indicated kind of the time frame when those either existing or proposed non-wire solutions would be removed with an actual wire solution?
Yeah, hi, Bryce. Oh, Dennis, would you like to go ahead?
No, go ahead, Peter, and then I'll hang on.
Okay, yeah. So I just want to highlight here, Bryce, that for the solutions that we're investigating in terms of optimization, these are planning solutions that we know we can rely on, and they do allow us to take advantage of the existing transmission system capacity that's available to us. So our goal is to reasonably utilize tools that are available to us, and when at the correct timing, where new transmission builds are required, we will jump to that solution, knowing that the transmission solution does provide longer term support and benefit to the system.
And just to tag on to that, two things. One is we would not consider remedial action schemes to be non-wire solutions. And when Peter and Dan are talking about, I'll call it run back of generation, what we're talking about is a contingency driven situation. So we've had a contingency on the system, and therefore we're either using remedial action schemes to trip generation under that contingency for a short period of time, or running back generation under that contingency within that remedial action scheme. Opening transmission, we would also not consider to be a non-wires service at all. TMR, on the other hand, I think we would consider that to be a more of a non-wires type service. And as you probably are aware, there are very limited situations within the transmission reg that we can utilize non-wires services right now, like TMR. And so we would look at that in those unique situations. And going forward, as we look at non-wire services options, we would consider those contracted type services that we go out to the market to obtain from service providers that would help us with reliability needs and potentially deferring infrastructure. And so, yes, we are looking at how we can move forward with additional non-wire services, but again, that'll need to be enabled a little bit more within the TREG and the policy a little bit anyways for us to go forward with that. So hopefully that helps answer that question.
Yes, thank you.
All right, and that looks like it's it for questions on this section, so we can move ahead.
All right, so we'll move on to a quick discussion about the 2021 long-term outlook. Four forecast scenarios were considered in the 2022 LTP. We focus on the reference case more than the other scenarios. It's considered relatively likely. Electric load growth is derived from a forecast of economic growth and other factors. In the near term, generator additions are based on the project list and the ISO's view of which projects are sufficiently certain to proceed. Long-term generation additions are based on economics. The clean tech scenario addresses accelerated decarbonization with more renewable generation, higher electric vehicle load, and less oil production. The robust oil and gas scenario addresses higher oil production while maintaining an emissions cap. And the stagnant oil and gas scenario addresses lower oil production compared to the reference case. The reference case represents winter peak load growth at a compound annual growth rate of approximately 0.5%. The robust oil and gas scenario has moderately higher peak load, and the stagnant oil and gas case has moderately lower load. The clean tech case has similar load to the reference case until the early 2030s. But in the 2030s, load growth accelerates far beyond the other scenarios, largely because of the increasing prevalence of electric vehicles. In the baseline scenario, all coal generation is retired or converted to gas operation by 2031, and some combined cycle gas generation is added to the system. Wind and solar generation development is expected to continue. Compared to today, about 2,500 megawatts of wind capacity and 300 megawatts of solar capacity is added by 2031. The clean tech scenario anticipates more renewable energy development, especially solar, and more energy storage. Combined cycle generation is needed to meet peak load when renewable energy production is low. The robust oil and gas scenario has the highest amount of added cogen capacity. Total generating capacity is lowest in the stagnant oil and gas scenario because of fewer coal unit conversions and less cogeneration capacity. We'll pause here to see if there are any questions about the 2021 LTO.
We have one question just came in, Dan. So this is from Kujo. Apologies for mispronouncing your name. I will allow your mic and you should be able to unmute yourself and ask your question.
Yeah, this is it's Kujo. I was just wondering how the outlook factors in the potential for oil and gas producers to potentially increase their load due to efforts to decarbonize around electrification and CCS.
Yeah, thanks for your question. I'm Lars. I work in the forecasting team at ISO. So we haven't considered any increases in load as a result of carbon capture and storage at oil and gas facilities. So any load, but what we've considered would be associated with a conventional oil sands project.
So is it fair to assume that like the projection is typically based around forecasts around where production might go versus, let's say, electrification of facilities, which would actually increase load compared to today?
Correct. Yeah, that's okay. Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, that is the only question we have in the queue, so we can move on.
So we'll move on. One more.
It looks like Richard Penn had just raised his hand, but then lowered it. Okay, Richard, I will unmute you. You should be able to unmute yourself and ask your question. Oh, Richard, you can unmute yourself. I guess he's changed his mind. So we can move forward. That was the last question.
There was a question in the chat, Ryan, about getting a copy of the presentation.
So we will post the presentation on our website. The presentation as it is right now is posted on our website, but we will post the recording on our website as well within 24 hours. Oh, looks like John has raised his hand. So John, I will unmute you. You can unmute yourself and ask your question.
Yeah, just to pick up on Kujo's question, understand that carbon capture storage, electrical related loads aren't included for the oil sands facilities and so forth, but what about for the under the clean tech scenario for all the utilities that are, you know, considering utilizing that for meeting net zero requirements on, say, like the big gas fired units? Is that in the clean tech scenario, that incremental load increase?
Yeah, thanks for your question, John. Same story for the clean tech scenario on things like combined cycle in the electricity market. We have not considered load associated with carbon capture and storage in the clean tech scenario, but I would point you to work we're doing on net zero pathways that we have on the website, and that's an area where we are continuing that work at the ASO.
Okay, thanks.
All right, and that looks like it's it, Dan, so we can move on.
All right, so we'll move on to discussion about near-term transmission developments. Most of the transmission projects for which the ISO identified a robust need in the 2022 LTP were potentially needed in the near term. The near-term assessment addresses the next 5 years and the reference case. We're conscious of opportunities to defer some of these projects, and we're aware the need might be further out, depending on how quickly market participant projects proceed. Nevertheless, they were included in the near-term section of the LTP document based on the earliest possible need date. In the Northwest, we identified the potential need for a new transmission line to send power to the Grand Prairie area in peak load conditions when local area generation was offline or had low output. However, risk-based analysis showed the conditions when the line is needed will occur with low probability in the near future. Market participants have expressed interest in connecting generation in the area. Generation development would reduce the risk of inadequate load serving capacity. However, the projects are large enough to pose system integration challenges of their own. The ISO will explore interconnection options with the project proponents. Considering these factors, the ISO is monitoring the situation instead of actively developing a NID. The Northwest has several other relatively low-cost needs. Transformation capacity at the Little Smoky substation needs to be increased. Some substations have the need for voltage support or may develop that need contingent on load growth. The voltage support would likely take the form of capacitor banks. The ISO has seen the need in the past for a transmission line between Bickerdike and Little Smoky. In this LTP, we found the need could be deferred or avoided by increasing the capacity of the existing 144 kV transmission lines. One reason the line might be avoidable is that load growth projections in the relevant area are somewhat lower. Another reason is that regional net inflows might be lower due to generator additions. In the Northeast, the ISO has been working with the customer to integrate a 900 megawatt cogeneration project with the system. The project warrants attention in the LTP because of its large size. The ISO has made a strong effort to accommodate the project with limited incremental transmission. A generation shedding remedial action scheme will be used to avoid transmission overloads in contingency conditions. In addition, the existing phase-shifting transformer can be used to redirect power flows between south and northwest in a way that reduces transmission constraints. The city of Edmonton needs a substantial transmission development to address the challenges of aging infrastructure and strained load-serving capacity. Some 72 kV cables in the city are reaching end of life. Like-for-like replacement is not a good option because the cables are operating at capacity and load growth is expected in the area. The needed development is mainly in the northeast part of the city. The area has faced operational challenges for a number of years. Some transmission lines need to be opened to manage overloads. We are actively developing a project to replace Kennedale with a higher capacity 240 kV substation and resupply into Mayo. We anticipate the prospective facility owner will consult with affected stakeholders about land impacts this year, and the ISO hopes to file a NID jointly with the TFO in 2023. In the future, the substation will be linked with Victoria to reduce loading or remove the need for other 72 kV lines. Higher capacity connections are also planned for Garneau and Hardisty. As I mentioned, the NID that's being prepared will replace Kennedale with the 240 kV substation, which will tentatively be called East Terminal. East Terminal will be supplied from 915 line, which is an existing 240 kV line between East Edmonton and Clover Bar. To implement the replacement, we'll need to build about 5 kilometers of double circuit 240 kV transmission, but this will allow us to decommission the old oil-filled 72 kV cables that currently pass under the North Saskatchewan River. In addition to the developments I've already described, we also identified the need for some relatively low-cost line rating increases in the Edmonton region. Our studies continue to show the need for transmission development in the Central East in the near future. We observed outflow constraints that occur because of the need to transfer power from generators in the Central East to Red Deer. The ISO has observed these needs in the past, and we recently got approval from the AUC to build transmission to address them. The project we planned is called the Central East Transfer Out Project, or CETO. It consists of a 240 kV transmission line between Tinchebrae, which is near Battle River, and Gates, which is north of Red Deer. In addition to the CETO project, we've also planned the PEN-V project, which addresses local load serving constraints by reinforcing the 144 kV system. PEN-V also creates new opportunities for generators to connect. The PEN-V lines go between Edgerton and Hansman Lake and between Vermilion and Milram. The PEN-V and CETO needs both have regulatory approval. We believe these projects are sufficient to meet the needs of the central region for the next several years. So other than PEN-V and CETO, we haven't included any plans for any new transmission in the central region in the 2022 LTP. Several projects are planned for the South region, including two major 240 kV transmission developments. In the Southwest, the Chapel Rock to Pincher Creek project is planned. The project has appeared in the last several long-term plans, and it is likely familiar to some stakeholders. The plan involves creating a 500 kV substation called Chapel Rock that connects to the Alberta-BC tie line near the border with BC. A 240 kV transmission line is planned to connect Chapel Rock with the bulk system in the Pincher Creek area at a substation such as Castle Rock Ridge or Goose Lake. The purpose of the project is to allow the system to accommodate generation projects, which it does by using the existing 500 kV tie line to reinforce the connection between the South and Calgary. The project allows capacity on the 240 kV network and the tie line to be shared for interchange with BC and the transfer of energy sourced from internal generation. In the Southeast, the Castles-Bowmanton-Whitlaw line runs from the southern terminal of Eatle at Brooks to Medicine Hat and further south. The main purposes of the double circuit CBW line are to collect energy from renewable projects in the Southeast and to provide a strong connection for the city of Medicine Hat. Several renewable energy projects have connected or met the ISO's sufficient certainty criteria, and we foresee continued strong interest. We anticipate that the CBW line could become oversubscribed with renewables projects. We are planning to use remedial action schemes to delay the need for transmission reinforcement, but developer interest is sufficient for us to start thinking about a wires-based solution. Our plan for the Southeast is still in development, and several options are under consideration. One option, shown on this diagram, is to build a line between Whitlaw and Pictor Butte and reinforce the connection between Pictor Butte and Milo. Besides CRPC and the Southeast project, there are several other projects planned for the South. The 138 kV system is reaching load serving capacity in the city of Lethbridge. To address this problem, we're considering the creation of a 240 kV substation in the west part of the city with a 138 kV connection to Beauron. There's a local constraint affecting renewable generation on the 138 kV network in the Sheerness area. To address this constraint, we are considering a 138 kV connection between Wintering Hills and Coyote Lake. Likewise, there's a risk of congestion in the Vauxhall area 138 kV network because of some renewable generator connections. To address the constraints, we are considering increasing the capacity of 610 line and 879 line. I'll pause here for questions about the near-term transmission plans.
We have a couple of questions popping up here, Dan. So Aaron was the first one. So Aaron, I'll unmute you, and you should be able to unmute yourself and ask your question.
Thanks. Yeah, Dan, I was just wondering if you can provide maybe a little bit more information about the 879L and 610 line upgrades that are being proposed, specifically with regards to like the design criteria for capacity and sizing. You mentioned, or in the document, it mentions, you know, a new 138 kV transmission line. Just wondering about how you guys landed on the appropriate sizing of that line, or what the target or criteria is to determine that size.
Thank you, Aaron. I'm happy to answer this question. So the Vauxhall area is an active system transmission project. So currently we're looking at understanding the need. So the need here is very much driven by the desire to connect additional generations in the 130 kV pocket between Tabor substation and Bowmanton substation. With that, if we have all of them connect, we are going to cause congestion. Therefore, the solution that we're investigating and proposing here is to mitigate those observed congestion in the near future, and also provide some limited capability to integrate additional generation in this area. So generally speaking, the scope that we're looking at is to increase the line rating by either removing some of the distribution underbuilt to gain the full conductor rating, or to reconductor transmission line so that we can move to a higher rating here. So the scope here is to mitigate observed congestion, forecasted congestion, and also provide limited capacity for additional generation integration capability.
Yeah, that helps. But I guess, like, in the previous presentation, for example, talking about, you know, CETO and like 2,500 megawatts of N-0 generation capability and that sort of thing, is there a specific target or magnitude that you guys are trying to accommodate with that development, like an extra 50 megawatts, 100 megawatts, 200 megawatts? What's sort of what's the target or goal for sizing the development?
Yeah, thank you. So the thought here is that we can accommodate additional, let's say, DER level type of development. As we see that this area is very rich in renewable resources. So at the same time, we're also looking at the larger 240 kV plan, potentially. One of the plan potential alternative is to run a new double circuit 240 kV line from Willa to either Milo or the southern terminal of the ETO HVDC HVDC line. So the 240 kV development definitely have one advantage, that it will have the ability to pick up additional generation developments in this area, which is currently only served by the 138. And we foresee that to be the longer term, larger solution to enable the connection of much larger amount of generation developed in this area.
Right. So for those contemplating larger projects, it would be the Southeast project rather than the Vauxhall project that you would kind of look to accommodate your project.
Yeah. Peter, maybe I'll just tag on, and then you can let them know the capacity we're looking at for the new line. Obviously, the 138 kV system down in that region is kind of all built to a similar capacity level. And so when we look at adding 138 kV capacity, we're also looking at not creating, like, there's no use building a really high capacity 138 kV line between two substations that we can't utilize anyways, because the 138 kV next door can't handle that capacity at all. So we are looking at the highest capacity we feel we can accommodate within that 138 kV network for this infrastructure. And Peter, you probably know the capacity better than I do that we're looking at to add there.
Yeah, for sure. So the existing line is roughly 120 MVA. For example, for the 610, we're looking to increase that to 180 MVA. But keeping in mind, to Dennis's point, the rest of the 138 kV lines in the area are mostly around that 120 MVA rating.
Right, which means, you know, we can accommodate a little bit more by doing that with the 138 kV and try to push the 138 kV network to its limits. But you only get so much there, and therefore why we have to look at 240 as the next level of solution to get higher capacity out of that part of the province. So hopefully that gives you a better feel there.
Yeah, no, that really helps. I wasn't sure, because it said a new 138 kV line as a potential, so I wasn't sure if you guys are thinking like double circuiting that line or adding like a parallel circuit or something like that with similar capacity. So 180 seems to be the target. I've got one last question, I guess, with regards to, specifically with regards to Bulmington. You know, in a lot of the studies that we've been doing, we see that Bulmington is, you know, sort of a pinch point on the system with regards to voltage performance. And obviously the double circuit 240 kV lines being proposed will help, but again, that seems like a longer term solution. I'm just wondering if there's something more immediate to address the voltage concerns that are being observed, you know, something like a capacitor bank or SVC that may be a bit of a stopgap measure to immediately allow additional capacity in that area.
Thank you, Aaron. I'm very sure you and I are looking at the same studies. And of course, we are also observing some potential challenges around the Bloomington area. So we are seeing the 240 kV build as a longer term solution, but at the same time, we are indeed investigating shorter term solution to mitigate provide some additional generation integration capability. So we are still investigating, and when we reach the stage where we believe that it's we can bring this forward and share that proposal, we will do that in the future.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thanks. And we'll move the question now over to Evan, who has his hand raised next. So, Evan, I will unmute you, and you should be able to unmute yourself.
Very good. Hopefully you can hear me. Thumbs up. I appreciate that.
Yes.
I just want to begin, Dennis, by offering our congratulations to you on your retirement and your career and your contribution. So good for you. Quick question. The ISO last year was contemplating a line utilization assessment of its of the system. Can you comment on when the line utilization report will be released?
Yeah, let me jump into that one, Evan. Marie-France Samaroden has got lead on us working through the transmission utilization side of the conversation and identifying potential metrics that we think will be effective in communicating utilization on the system. we've been doing some work already here this year. I'm optimistic that we'll be out sharing our thinking and preliminary results on that here in, well, for sure this year, but maybe mid-year. So stay tuned for that. You will see first, though, our transmission capability mapping that we will be sharing here very shortly, the results of that, which will give industry a good understanding at the substation level how much capacity of generation we can integrate at the substation level. That'll be a first step, I think, to help people understand where there's capacity on the system.
Great, Dennis. Thank you very much, and congratulations once again.
Yeah, thanks, Evan.
We have another question from Anthony. So, Anthony, I will allow you to unmute yourself, and you should be able to unmute your end, and go ahead.
Thank you. My question was directly in regards to the Southeast area planned upgrades. I know there's some very near term with the 138 kV and potential longer term with the 240 kV. And so I guess I was just looking to see what kind of approximate timelines you would put on that. I understand that that's hard to predict, but mm-hmm. 1 to 2 years for the near term and maybe like 5 years for the long term, something like that.
Yeah, thank you, Anthony. You're absolutely correct. So for the 138 Vauxhall area plan, which is the 610 and 879, we're looking at targeting an in-service date sometime mid-year of 2024. So that's about 2 years out. And for the 240 kV development, that's a longer-term plan. As we are working through the planning stage, we're looking at potentially 5 years or thereabout that type of time frame for the 240 kV. I hope that answers your question for the near term and the longer term.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Peter, if I may add, for the longer term projects, we will also be coming up with milestones. And so it will depend on, the timing will depend on when we hit the milestones.
Oh, that's a great day. Thank you, Ada.
Okay.
And it looks like we have one more question with a raised hand. So that's Ed. So, Ed, I will allow you to unmute yourself. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to congratulate Dennis as well, and it's kind of nice that he's on this call so we can still ask him questions. I thought he was retired already. So. just a question on your definition of near term. Because in the past, when we looked at these plans, I always had the impression that near term meant right now you're thinking that this would be constructed in the next 5 years. But I think that could have changed. I wonder if you could just clarify what you mean by near term.
Sure, thank you. So the near term, the way when we perform our studies continue to be 5-year mark. So when we look at the LTP assessment, we take the 5-year forecast, put it into our model, and we determine if there's any need based on that forecast information. So with that, we develop a number of transmission solutions. Understanding some of these transmission solutions, especially the larger scope one, typically take roughly 6, 7, or 8 years to reach in service date from the time of where we start planning phase. So the solutions may take a little longer. So in our sense, the 5-year time frame that we're envisioning right now is essentially an assumption that we develop the plan, which take about a year or two, and also we need to after we develop the LTP, we also within the ISO internally prioritize and understand the different needs, looking at all the different requirements across the province, and we identify the higher priority ones. And once we have that understanding there, we move forward to the NIT development phase. So the 5-year time frame now, roughly, you're looking at is the time we need to develop a project. And then at the end of it, if we go to the NIT and assuming that the milestone trigger is met, soon after the NIT approval, or we can definitely work with the TFO to have the facilities constructed. But that takes you out for the whole development process of a transmission project, which is roughly that 7 or 8 year type time frame.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
And we have one question from Darcy White. So Darcy, I'll unmute you. You should be able to ask your question.
Great. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Just following up on Anthony's question about the 240 expansion. What, I guess for renewable generators coming on there, like what capacity remains before you're full? And what kind of, you know, delays are new generators getting into the queue or generators in the queue, what kind of, you know, capacity is currently available before that's full and then you have to wait for the expansion?
Uh-huh. Yeah, thank you, Darcy, for the question. So I think pointing to what Dennis mentioned, in the very near future, you'll be able to see the capability map being made available from the ISO. So that map would certainly provide you with additional information on remaining capability in this part of the province. So we are definitely actively working with all the market participants looking to connect in this area, and we'll try to enable them as much as we can. So at this point, it's difficult to pinpoint to an exact number, given that the connection picture is very dynamic, especially in an active area like the Southeast. But we're definitely seeing a strong development interest, primary renewables, but potentially any transmission project that's built will be able to accommodate any type of generation facilities. So the 240 kV line that we are envisioning definitely is a facility that's driven by generation integration requirements. So I hope that gives you a rough answer without a specific number here.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I missed where the capability map can be found.
It's not available yet, but you'll be made available very soon.
So on the on the capability mapping, we'll be doing an industry session on that in April, but we're planning to post it on our website at the end of March. So it should be available end of March. That'll allow market participants to take a look at it, get familiar with it, get questions ready, and then we'll have a bit of a session in April to go through any of those questions. So keep an eye on our website for the end of March. As it relates to the Southeast, the team is working through the NID analysis right now, and part of that is what we would call congestion assessments, which gives us an understanding of, I'll call it probabilistically, how much incremental generation we can accommodate in the area. That obviously is dependent upon type of generation and location of generation. And so once we finish that work, we'll bring that visibility here to the industry. That'll give you a better idea of how much incremental capacity we can accommodate before we run into forecasted future congestion risk. And as the industry should be aware, we are obligated to connect anybody that wants to connect. And so we will continue to work with market participants to connect them to the network. And we recognize that adding more market participants increases the potential for future congestion risk. And that's why we're working on the NID for the 240 kV as we speak.
Great, thank you.
Yep.
And we have one final question here in the chat, Peter, from Anton, who asks, are these near-term identified issues based on N-1, N-1, -1, N-2 categories? Also, do these consider 138, 240, and 500 kV asset classes, or only 240 kV and up?
Yeah, thank you, Anton. For the near-term assessment, we are definitely looking at all voltage classes, all the way from 69 kV to 500 kV. In terms of the need that's been identified in the LTP, they are driven by M-0 as well as M-1 categories. I hope that answers your question.
Just to clarify that, Peter, correct me if I'm wrong. The N-0 is related to generation.
That's right.
Primarily, as far as future forecasted congestion risk. The N-1 is related to load and the reliability of the system under contingency, which is what we plan for. Obviously, generation, we use RAS schemes for contingency where we can. And so just want to make sure that distinction is clear.
Thank you, Dennis, for the addition. Appreciate it.
That's the only, well, it looks like Dan Visser has a question now in the chat. He asks, how is the ISO working to mitigate extremely high loss values for portions of system that are far? There may not be congestion or contingency conditions. However, we still have high loss values. We still have high loss values, perhaps?
Okay, Dan, I'm trying to interpret your question, especially around the high loss value portion of the question. So from a when we assess the system, we assess the system based on reliability, and N-1 contingency and N-0 for generation is certainly the main driver for us to identify transmission need. Congestion is certainly another one, as the transmission regulation requirements tell us that we must plan for a congestion-free system. In terms of system losses, thank you for the clarification. So in terms of system losses, for sure, generation, location, and development are driven by individual market participant, and we look for ways to accommodate and connect these facilities in the most efficient way. And part of the transmission development process is the fact that we have the opportunity to do transmission line optimization study, where we look at the long-term utilization of the transmission line, and we will look for opportunity to reduce losses. But we also balance that against the overall capital cost of the transmission construction. So in a way, that's our approach to help minimize loss where possible.
That looks like it for questions at the moment. So in the interest of time, I would suggest we move on to the next section of the presentation, Dan.
Sure. So next we'll talk briefly about what might happen under some of the LTO scenarios in the long term. Under the clean tech scenario, we expect a high rate of load growth accelerating in the 2030s, largely because of electric vehicle use. Since the load growth is related to electric vehicles, it'll be centered in urban areas like Calgary and Edmonton. At this time, we have only partial visibility of the transmission needs that might arise from growing load in Edmonton and Calgary. In Calgary, we anticipate development might be necessary in the north part of the city, such as reinforcing supply to Beddington or extending the 138 kV network around Airdrie. In Edmonton, the developments we already discussed address the most pressing needs. In addition, it's possible the system might need reinforcement in East Edmonton and Spruce Grove. In both cities, there are two major factors that will affect the best path of development: the growth of new communities and the capability of the existing distribution networks. In the coming years, if this scenario materializes, we'll be looking to distribution owners to collaborate with us to plan new points of delivery, and we'll expand the bulk system accordingly. Along with a higher rate of load growth in towns and cities, the cleantech scenario predicts an increasing amount of renewable generation. The CETO, CRPC, and Southeast projects will likely create the capacity that's needed to accommodate the renewable generation. However, the projects might be needed sooner than they otherwise would. In the stagnating oil and gas scenario, the province has less load and generation compared to the baseline, so we aren't anticipating any incremental needs. In the robust oil and gas scenario, we may have some incremental needs to serve industrial projects in the north. A second Fort McMurray 500 kV line has been part of the long-term plan for some time. It is possible that that line might be needed if development exceeds expectations. However, with the first 500 kV line having gone into service recently, we're well positioned for growth at present. If needs do materialize in the area, we might be able to defer the need for a 500 kV development by upgrading 9L74, which would be a relatively low-cost project. I'll pause here for questions about the long-term scenarios.
Looks like we have a couple of questions here, Dan. So Santi has another. So I will unmute you, Santi, and you can go ahead. You have to unmute yourself, rather, sorry.
Mic check. Can you hear me? This is great. On slide 24, first bullet refers to the clean tech scenario, particular renewable generation growth capacity, and lists Southeast, CETO, and CPRC. Would PENV also be a potential project that could be advanced depending on the amount of growth we see in generation in that area? I think you had referred to both PENV and CETO to facilitate increased renewable generation in the Central East area. So I was just curious if PENV was deliberately left off the list, or if that was just, again, this list was not exhaustive.
I think it's actually more like we saw PENV proceeding quickly in any case.
Oh, I see. Okay. No, that's helpful.
Oh, is that right, Peter?
Overall, what we're seeing, of course, that all these projects are there to help integrate additional renewables or generations in general. So they are mostly tied to the pace of generation development, and PENV is certainly one of them. This is definitely left out by error. I just want to clarify that. So overall, PENV should be part of the list.
Okay, and then just a follow-up. I think the second last slide, 31, or maybe it's 32, I can't recall. Sure, we'll get there, but I figured this might be a good time to talk about this since we're talking about potential advancement of these projects. Both CETO and PENV, I think, are slated or referred to at earliest 2025 and at latest 2027. So with the clean tech scenario, does that mean that both of those projects could be advanced earlier than even 2025, or is 2025 that quote-unquote advancement of the projects in response to clean tech development?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the short answer is yes, it can be advanced earlier. So just to provide the context later on, so in the slide 30 and 29, we do have a table showing the earlier in service date and later in service date of all the transmission project that's identified in the LTP. And that table is based on the reference case scenario that we are seeing, although we provided a bit of a range, knowing that many of these projects are driven, or the timing of these projects will be dependent on the pace of generation development. So with that in mind, under a clean tech scenario, or if generation projects are developed at a much faster pace, then these facilities could be in service earlier than the dates as indicated. However, I just want to highlight that this is 2022, and as we have worked with TFO on the construction timeline of these major transmission facilities, for example, for CETO, it will take roughly 2 years to construct. With that, the earliest in-service date, feasible in-service date for any of these major ones will be as early as 2024, for example.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. Thanks for the response, Peter and Dan.
Yeah.
Thanks, Santi. And Cujo has another question, so I will unmute you, Cujo, and you should have a prompt on your end to unmute yourself, and you can go have a question. Yeah.
Thanks for taking another question from me, guys. Just in this section on the stagnating oil and gas, a bit of a comment. Like, I understand where that comes from, you know, particularly given my previous question around forecasts being tied to production. But my concern, again, just goes to that, you know, as oil and gas operators are looking to increasingly potentially electrify equipment to reduce their emissions. And, you know, and as an example, if I look at the Northwest region, where there are issues around flow on the 144 kilovolt grid, and the ability to supply power and accommodate generation, I wonder what your thoughts are around the potential that these limitations could be a limiting factor in oil and gas operators' ability to electrify, to accommodate CCS, which then, you know, limits their ability to meet their ESG targets and, you know, potentially avoid future carbon tax liability, in the sense that, you know, there would be efforts to do it, but if the grid can't accommodate the extra power supply, particularly around 144 in the Northwest region, for example, and you'd have to potentially tie into the 240 kilovolt system, which is a bit of a ways away from the Grand Prairie region. I'm just wondering if you have thoughts around how you might maybe in the future accommodate that, you know, in oil and gas, it might not actually be stagnating. You could actually see production stay consistent, but load increase due to some of these emissions reductions efforts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Thank you, Cujo, for your question. So I'm taking that as a situation that's more related to, I would say, near existing pace of oil and gas industry development, or potentially faster because of the electrification side of the story, particularly in the Northwest. So I'm going to answer that or respond to your question or comment this way. So looking at the Northwest, certainly we understand that that's an area that's very active for gas exploration and drilling facilities and processing. So considering that, and also in the, when you look at the past LTPs, the ISO has developed or proposed a number of different transmission plans to enable increased load in the Northwest, particularly around that Grand Prairie area. So even though this year, I think if you look at the scope of the Northwest plan, it's relatively reduced compared to the past LTPs. These plans are definitely still in the books for the ISO, even though they are not active system project, active being meaning that we are working hard to develop a NIT and potentially file a NIT with the commission. So what I'm trying to say is that the plans are still there, and we continue to work with market participants who are looking to connect facilities, whether they are generations or load additions to that part of the province. So we are prepared, and we will be at the ready whenever there's a need. We will have to trigger or at least initiate relevant transmission developments as required, depending on the pace of development in that particular part of the province.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you for the question.
All right, it looks like that is it for the questions for the time being, so we can move on to the next section.
Sounds good. So as part of our long-term planning activities, we considered how technology changes in a few key areas could affect grid reliability.
One area of concern is related to inverter-based generation resources, which we call IBRs. Wind and solar generators operate differently from classical synchronous generators. They're usually connected to the grid using inverters. Typical inverter controls follow the grid's frequency. When a frequency disturbance occurs, these types of resources do not contribute extra energy to help restore net demand balance. That increases the risk that islanding or loss of supply could lead to load shedding. It's possible that IBRs with advanced control systems, perhaps backed by energy storage, could help improve the system's frequency performance. We continue to look into the risks and opportunities related to IBRs, but at this time, we did not find it necessary to include any measures in the LTP to mitigate risks associated with IBRs. Another challenge the ISO faces is related to energy storage devices. Energy storage is relatively new to the energy market in Alberta. Opportunities might exist for energy storage devices to provide services that reduce the need for transmission build. But at this time, we don't have established precedents for using energy storage this way. We're planning on carrying out further studies and working with stakeholders to make good use of energy storage whenever it's appropriate to address future grid reliability needs. I'll pause here for questions about new technologies.
We have one question that just popped up, Dan, from Matthew. So Matthew, I will allow you to unmute yourself and you should be able to ask a question.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. So going back to the studies that the ISO is doing on the detailed flexibility report later in 2022, given that the inertia concerns and the primary frequency thoughts around this whole issue around IBRs, will this be integrated with the ISO's evaluation of the MSSE that is also expected to occur later in this year, or are they separate?
Well, thanks. Thanks for your question. So, yes, we are carrying out an MSSC review initiative. So the flexibility work that we are currently carrying out in a shop will be integrated with the broader picture where we look at the MSSC issue as well. So yeah, it will be coordinated. I mean, all these works and initiatives will be coordinated.
Thanks for that. And then when you guys are doing that work, is that, these studies being done off of the ISO's clean tech scenario, or will you be contemplating sort of even more aggressive renewable penetrations with, your net zero work?
Yeah. So the flexibility work, is mainly based on the, 2021 LTO scenarios, but going forward, we will definitely keep an eye on the changing, generation scenario and incorporate the net zero scenarios in our work. But for this flexibility report version that is scheduled to come out by mid of this year, we are looking at, we've looked at the 2021 LTO. But our plan is to, of course, include the net zero work, net zero scenario analysis in our flexibility calculations going forward.
Thanks.
And that appears to be all for the questions at the time being.
Before we go to the next section, I thought I had seen a comment on TPL 003 and TPL 004. I can't find that comment anymore, but...
I think it might have been removed. The commenter may have deleted it. So.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that we talked about transmission driven by N minus zero considerations or N minus one, but our planning process is based on our TPL standards, and that requires us to satisfy TPL 001, 2, 3, 4. And that means we we always make sure that we are prepared for the TPL-003 and we satisfy the TPL-003 requirements as well as the TPL-004 extreme contingency events. The incremental transmission is driven by N-0, N-1, but we are always prepared for multiple contingencies where we are allowed to shed load or generation to maintain the system in a reliable state. So I just wanted to provide that clarification. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Ada. And as there's no more questions, we can move on to the next section.
So finally, we'll talk for a bit about costs. The 2022 LTP has included a breakdown of costs for major transmission projects. On this slide and the next, we've included planning level cost estimates of LTP projects for your reference. There are a few projects that I'd like to highlight. The City of Edmonton project is progressing quickly, and it's likely to be one of the next projects we progress to NID stage. The cost for the earliest part of the project is about $120 million. An additional $200 million costs are expected later on. The Southeast project is a major investment with a cost that may be between $400 and $500 million. Since several options are still under consideration, we'd like stakeholders to be aware that the cost is uncertain. The cost of the Chapel Rock project is estimated to be near $400 million, and the cost of the Lethbridge project is projected to be near $40 million. This plot shows our projection of cumulative system transmission spending in the 2020s. The blue line is the spending projection from the 2020 LTP. The yellow and green lines show high and low estimates based on the 2022 LTP. The estimates are lower because we found opportunities to defer or modify some projects. We are currently projecting that cumulative spending will be between $1.2 and $1.5 billion approximately by the end of the decade. That's all I had to say about costs, so we'll pause here for some final questions.
Thanks, Dan. And as a reminder, if anyone has any questions, they can raise their virtual hand. This presentation is on our website. The link was provided in the chat, and the recording will be posted on ISO.ca within 24 hours. While we wait for some questions, we can put up these quick polling questions. And it looks like we have a question that has come in the chat from Andrew Cameron. So Andrew asks, were future climate conditions and climate hazards, wildlife, overland flooding, increased wind speeds considered? And if so, what sorts of projects or plans are being implemented to address these issues?
Okay, thank you for the question here. I think this is a really good one, essentially consideration of extreme weather conditions. So I think there are two opportunities where we do factor that in. One is certainly on the forecast end, if there are any additional factors that can drive the low development, for example, then that will be included in that area of the ISO's work. But primarily looking at extreme events, the ISO certainly have an initiative related to extreme event planning, related to, for example, if there are difficulties on the gas facilities, But at the same time, we're also, for example, in the Southeast, looking at a situation where we may lose the double circuit tower at one time. That's considered a very low probability but high impact event. So as we shared with the industry last October, that we're looking into that event and considering how we can incorporate that into our NIT development, because we do understand the impact of such extreme event can be detrimental to the power system as a whole here in Alberta. So in certain ways, they are considered for sure. But at current stage, when we develop the overall LTP, we are primarily looking at a province-wide scan using the N-0 and N-1 criteria, where we may, because of those criteria, where we may drive the need for additional transmission.
I'll just tag on to that, Peter.
Thank you.
Obviously, the transmission facility owners are looking at climate change and the implications that future climate change may have on their assets in the space of like wildfires or flooding or things like that. The ISO is going to be doing some work this year on climate adaptation and looking at, I'll call it very long-term climate change and what that may look like here in the province of Alberta, be it precipitation, extreme weather type events, that type of thing, increasing probabilities of that, and the potential implications that has on standards for infrastructure and impacts on infrastructure. And so that's the focus for us right now, is just to make sure we've got a good feel for what might be coming in the next 10, 20, 30 years from a climate change perspective and the potential incremental infrastructure risks that the province might be exposed to, and therefore what action we might have to take with certain standards to help increase the robustness and resilience of that infrastructure going forward as climate changes unfold here in the province. So stay tuned for that. You'll probably see the outcome of that preliminary work next year.
Thank you, Dennis. We have Joe Slater has raised his hand. So, Joe, I will unmute. I'll give you the ability to unmute yourself, and you can ask your question.
Thanks, Ryan. I was just wondering if you could give a bit of clarity as to why wind capacity is showing to go down, albeit a small amount, in the clean tech scenario.
Hi, Jin, or yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I can take that. Yeah. So for that one, there are some, I believe it's the retirements of existing assets that have reached end of life, is where you see some decreases in the wind capacity.
So did those reach end of life and they won't be replaced? That's why you see kind of goes down by 120 megawatts.
That is correct. For the, when you're saying the 120, you're referring to the robust forecast, or where are you seeing the one?
In the clean tech, I'm looking on slide 13 there.
Yeah, so, yeah, this, sorry, so I should, there's retirements that happened in the 2030s. That 120 is referring to that the clean tech is a little bit lower, actually, than the reference case. So it's a relative number. So right. The reason behind that is that there's more wind development later on in the clean tech scenario compared to the reference case. They're both very similar, though, from a near-term perspective.
Okay, thank you.
We had a comment in the chat from Victoria, from IPCA. And she asks, of the 1.2 to 1.5 billion, do you have an approximate breakdown by franchise TFO and or concept of any projects that would suit for a competitive transmission process?
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Victoria. Guess I'll answer the first half of the question and see if anybody else can help on the competitive process. So on the breakdown, we currently did not break it down to the different TFO But there are certainly certain ones that are going to specific ones. For example, the City of Edmonton project that we mentioned, the $120 million project, the bulk majority of that is going to the EPCOR service territory. And most of the all the project here, we are developing it on the basis of the service territory as prepared that exists today between the TFOs. There are certain projects that also involve two TFOs, and CETO is certainly one such example. But overall, we currently did not break it down, but you can certainly break it down based on TFO service territory.
And I'll just tag on to that, Victoria, two things that just to recognize that 1.2 to 1.5 billion is based on potential projects. So I don't want people leaving here thinking that we're committed to construct $1.2 to $1.5 billion worth of projects based on this long-term plan. It's a very preliminary plan and obviously driven by what unfolds scenario-wise in the province. As far as competitive transmission process, as we work through any of these projects, we'll look at the viability of potentially using that tool that we have here at the ISO. We would think those are obviously more suited for large projects that are fairly unintegrated into the rest of the system. And so that Fort McMurray project was highly suitable for that. And we'd consider what's suitable going forward. Off the top, I don't know if there would be any that would be suitable for that type of application or not, but we'll definitely consider it as we go forward.
She has a follow-up for you, Dennis. She asked, what would you like us to leave here thinking the ISO wants to build? Feel free to answer in billions or megawatt.
Sure. The ISO wants to build what the province is going to need. Is what the ISO would like to build, and they'd like to build it on the timing of when we realize it is needed. From a long-term plan perspective, you understand it's very much scenario-based, and so there's a range of possible outcomes, 5, 10, 15, 20 years out in the future. We've given you the range of what that outcome may look like. You can see it on slide 31, and so I would like people to leave here that there's a potential range of costs that might be incurred over the next 10 to 20 years, and you can see what that potential range may be. I would describe the high is likely the high and the low is likely the low, but obviously things can be a little different from that and could be slightly lower in time because we might be able to optimize and push things out further. I doubt it would be slightly higher unless a lot of things happen differently from a scenario perspective. So I know, Victoria, you might want a particular number. I'm not going to give a particular number because this is very much a plan with a range of scenarios and a range of outcomes, and hence why we have provided exactly that, a range.
Thank you, Dennis. We have one more question in the chat, and I apologize for the mispronunciation, from Basayo, who asks, for the risk-based planning approach, did you measure risk consequences based solely on megawatts at risk, or were socioeconomic factors also considered?
Yeah, thanks for the question. So the risk-based planning approach, this is very much related to us considering what are the probability of certain event happening. Let me take an example. In the past, when we develop the LTP study cases, what we typically look at is have all the generations in a particular region be on practically at full capacity. For example, in the south, where the region is rich in with wind and solar resources, we would dispatch both wind and solar facility to practically their maximum capacity and look at how the transmission system may be impacted under such dispatch scenario. Over the years, as the ISO improved on our modeling ability, we come to a better understanding how the two may interact with each other, or the coincidence between these two type of resources together with load information that we have for the region. So as a result, when we develop study cases now, we do look at a situation where we anticipate the highest overall generation based on our hourly simulation model that indicate the highest stress condition on the transmission system, couple that with a reasonably low local load because of, for example, the different wind and solar resources at that time. So that gives you an idea that we're taking additional risk by not studying the full extreme, but also we understand that the risk we take on is very marginal in that sense. So that's one area where we sort of say that we are looking at a risk-based assessment for the LTP.
Thank you, Peter. We have one question from Santi. So Santi, you should be able to unmute yourself and go ahead.
Thanks, guys, and appreciate taking the last question from me. I'm just trying to understand the last couple slides here in terms of the major transmission projects and trying to see if I understand this correctly. So, you know, looking at line item one, the Ryecroft SVC, you know, there's no range between earlier and later, 2023, 2023, right? So is it fair to assume that in 2023, you know, that project is going ahead, that $40 million is committed, that's not being deferred? So in terms of what is being deferred, I presume, you know, I think I read, if I read the last slide correctly, it's relative to the 2020 LTP, all these costs.
That's correct. That's correct.
So I don't know, you know, I guess I'll probably have to check back between, you know, when these costs and dates are relative to the 2020 LTP, but I guess certainly that would have helped me in terms of better understanding, you know, what's actually being deferred and what's potentially not. Because it's not clear just by reading this table how it translates to the graph, because nothing in the table is relative to 2020. At least there's no, it's not showing a delta.
We can probably help you with that very quickly.
Sure, no, that'd be great.
PenV, CETO, and CRPC are the three large projects that, as it related to 2020 LTP, have been deferred here in this LTP.
Gotcha. Okay. No, that's
it's those three primary ones. And the way to read this table is, yes, the first one actually is in construction, as it says, and so that's why the in-service date is 2023. And then the other projects where it's NIT approved, where we've got construction milestones in place depending on the pace of generation integration in the regions. And so depending how fast they go, if it's based on the reference case, it looks like 2027 is the time period that we would need to have that in service. If the clean tech case comes, it pulls us forward from pace perspective about a couple of years. And so that's kind of the range we have provided on those two. You can see Vauxhall is in the 2024 time period. That should tell you where we recognize we need to move with that one. And so we're moving with it, and probably the fastest we can get that one in service is 2024, 2023, that type of time period. City of Edmonton, you can see, is two stages, 2025, 2029. And then you can see the other projects are kind of depending on if we have the fast clean tech, high renewable versus the reference case, kind of the time periods between those two scenarios.
Sure.
Hopefully
no,
that helps. And we kind of put the priority as this is what we see currently, the priority that we need to go after these developments, both from a NIT development perspective and getting ready to be able to trigger construction and have them in service through milestones.
Great. Thanks, Dennis.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And we have one final question from Darcy in the chat. And Darcy asks, are these deferrals partly justified because of public pushback on escalating transmission rates?
No. The deferrals are based primarily on the incremental modeling capability that we have developed here at the ISO that is heavily focused on congestion analysis, which has allowed us to forecast future congestion risk utilizing hourly data. And so with that more sophisticated modeling that we now have available and tying to when new generation reaches certainty from our perspective that they're going to actually move to construction and energization, combining that increased analysis with that sequencing and milestoning approach, we've been able to confidently go look as a result of the locations we're seeing of new generation, the types, solar versus wind, and there has been a shift to solar from wind, which changes the diversity of generation production in a particular region, has allowed us to more confidently push out the timing of when we see the forecasted future congestion occurring on the system. And so, no, it doesn't have anything to do with the cost of ratepayers, but obviously we are highly motivated to incur transmission costs only when we see it confidently needed. And so we will continue to push the timing of infrastructure out as far out as we can to reduce cost to ratepayers, recognizing we have an obligation to plan the system to be congestion-free.
Thanks, Dennis. So with that in mind and the fact that we're now at 12 o'clock, we'll just launch these last couple of poll questions and then wrap it up for the morning. But if there are any more questions, people can feel free to reach out to stakeholderrelations@iso.ca, and we can get in touch with them after the fact.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us. Hopefully, that was a valuable session for your time. I know time is important, so if you have any additional feedback or questions, we appreciate that. Otherwise, thanks very much, and we'll see you again in our next session, whatever that may be. Take care.